It's a tremendous schuss for me to start this evening off in the CBY Beis Medrash program, and it's a tremendous opportunity to introduce my friend. But the learning this summer from the Beis Medrash program is for Refuah Shlema, the Chaim Yisachar, the Chaim Mishkat, and all Chol Yisrael, and Chaim should have a complete Refuah Shlema quickly.
Okay. Thanks for coming. So, I want to touch on a completely independent topic, unrelated to what we talked about till now, but something that I think is fundamental to how we think about halacha in general, and that is the role of Torah Sheba'al Peh. Right? We're so used to the idea that there's Torah Sheba'al and Torah Sheba'al Peh that maybe we've stopped thinking about, you know, why it had to be that way. And maybe, to be honest, some people think that Torah Sheba'al Peh, you know, is the manipulable portion of Torah, and that's the part we have to watch out for, and Torah Shebichsav, that's the real part. I want to start at the very beginning, before we get into the substance. The real thing I want to talk about is why we need Torah Sheba'al Peh. But before we get there, let's just start. Where does the idea come from that there is such a thing as Torah Sheba'al Peh? So, of course, there are sources for this, because it's one of the earliest Kabbalists that we have, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe Torah in writing, and with it, an oral explanation. The earliest source is the Pasuk in Vayikra, number one on the sheet, says, Eila ha, it's the end of the Tochacha in Bechukosai, it says, Eila ha-chukim v'ha-mishpatim v'ha-toros. These are the chukim, the toros, obviously toros is plural. And Rashi says, what's Vahat Toros? Achas Bichsa V'Achas Baal Peh. Plural of Torah, Toros, because one is Bichsa and one is Baal Peh. Magid Shekulam Nitnu L'Moshe B'Sinai. This is a source for the fact that there is an oral tradition that goes with the written Torah, and it was all given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Rashi, of course, didn't make this up. Rashi took it from the Sifra in number two, which is a little more full. The Sifra says, Eila ha-chukim ha-mishpatim v'ha-toros. Ha-chukim eilu ha-medrashos. Chukim are drashos. V'ha-mishpatim eilu ha-dinim. That's pure halacha. V'ha-toros. What's the plural toros? Melameh sheshtei toros nitnu lahem li-Yisrael. Echad b'chzah ve'echad ba'al peh. Okay, there are different versions of this medrash, and in fact, I think you see a hint of it in Rashi, because he says, Magid Shekulam Nitnu L'Moshe B'Sinai, as if there might be more than two. There are medrashim that talk about multiple versions of things, but the Sifra is pretty clear. Two Toros, one Bichsav, one Baal Peh, both given to Moshe at Har Sinai. Okay. Now, the first point I want to make, and it's simple, but we don't think about it, so I thought I would try to make this point clearly, is even if we had no source for the idea of Torah Sheba'al Peh, we would need Torah Sheba'al Peh. Don't take me wrong. The Torah is a poorly written book. Okay, I know. If you take that out of context, then I lose my job. But it doesn't have... If I ask you, where do you know the 39 malachos of Shabbos? Well, the Torah never told us, right? It says, it never tells you what they are. Without Torah Sheba'al Peh, we wouldn't know, right? How do you know that Pre-Eitz Hadar is an Esrog? Well, there are parts of the Torah that we wouldn't know if it didn't come with an explanation. It would be impossible to understand. Here's some better examples. Look at number three. We just read a few weeks ago the story of the Mekoshei Sheitzim. Mekoshei Sheitzim is a person who gathered wood on Shabbos. So the Torah tells us, Vayihiyu b'nei so b'amidbar vayimtsu ish Mekoshei Sheitzim b'yom ha-Shabbos. They found somebody gathering wood on Shabbos. Vayakrivu oso ha-motzim oso Mekoshei Sheitzim el Moshe ve'el Aaron ve'el kol ha'idah. So they brought him to court. Vayanichu oso b'mishmar kilo forash maye oselo. And they put him in jail, because it wasn't clear what to do to him. Now, Rashi tells us, the question wasn't whether he was guilty or not. Look in Rashi here. Rashi says, Ki lo farash maye aselo, lo hayu yodim be'ezo misa yamus. They didn't know which of the four misas bezdin they should apply to him. Abo yodim hayu, shah mechal al Shabbos b'misa. But they knew that the person who was mechal Shabbos gets the punishment of death. So if I'm the Mekoshish Eitzim, I say, I didn't know. It doesn't say any place in the Torah that gathering wood on Shabbos is usur. And it's not even obvious exactly what malacha it is. But apparently everybody knew that this guy was violating the law, but it's not written any place. So without the Torah Shabbal Peh, right, it has to be the case that they were given the Torah with an explanation, otherwise the story makes no sense, because it doesn't say any place at all that the Mekoshesh, that if you gather wood on Shabbos, you're Chayv Misa. And Rashi, right away, if you just read the Psukim, so you would have said they put him in jail because maybe they didn't know if he was Chayv Misa at all. Maybe they wanted to, on the other hand, you don't just run around like you see a kid doing something, you don't just put him in jail. I don't know. But it seems to me, it's so obvious that without the Torah Shabbat Peh, the story would be meaningless. Okay, another example. How do you know that in order to get divorced, you have to actually write a get and give this, you're the husband, you know, and give the get to your wife. That's how you do it. So the Torah says in number four, Ki gacha ishi shou be'Allah. Okay, you take a wife and you have relations with her. V'haya im lo sim sachein be'inav ki matza bar vas davar. And now something went wrong. V'chosav lo sefer krisus v'nasan v'yada v'shilcha mi beiso. You give her a get, she goes from your house. V'yatsa mi beiso v'alcha v'haysa li'ish acher. She leaves your house, she gets married to somebody else. That marriage doesn't work out. So the second husband writes her a sefer krisus again. Or there's another way you could end your marriage. Or the second husband dies. What's the point of this parasha? Pasuk Dalet. Lo yuchal ba'ala harishon asher shilcha lashuv lekachta liyos lo leisha acharei asher hu tama'a. The first husband, once she's married somebody else, right? The first husband cannot then remarry her. Because we don't have to go into the reasons, because she's been married to somebody else. That's called Masik Rushaso, Sin Issa Daraisa. The whole point of this parsha is because of this bizarre din, not bizarre, but this unusual case of Masik Rushaso. Right? It's like the Torah spends all its time telling you some detail. It doesn't tell you, this is the rule of Gittin. Oh, by the way, here's some specific, it just deals with a specific example. Time and time again, the Torah seems to like have left out the fundamental din in favor of some side point. Right? All of Dinei Mamonos and Mishpatim seem to focus on, you know, examples that are not in the ordinary course. And a lot of people point this out, that the Torah seems to focus on not the ordinary cases. The Torah doesn't seem to be written in a systematic way where here's the principle and now here are the applications of it. It seems almost the reverse. Rav Shamshon Varah Hirsch has this thing where he says, it's like the Torah Shabbal Peh, the Torah is like the notes to a lecture, but if you didn't go to the lecture, you wouldn't understand the notes. Because it's like, it only gives you the strange cases. It doesn't give you the examples. Look at number five. The din is, you do something, you have to get matos. What do you get? You get 40. Of course, the answer is you don't get 40, you get 39. The Torah tells you there is a punishment of matos. Who gets matos? Doesn't say any place in the Torah. Now, one place in the Torah, matos is the most familiar, the most common punishment Bezdin meets out for violations. It never once tells you in the Torah who gets makos. The book doesn't work on its own. And forgetting Medrashim and forgetting sources, anybody who simply opens the Torah and tries to learn it would right away recognize, if you didn't know any Torah Shabbat, you just wanted to learn Torah Shabbat, it's impossible. It was obviously written with a companion document, namely the Torah Shabbat Peh. So there's nothing even to discuss. Nobody could deny the fact that the Torah was given with Torah Shabbal Peh, because without it, it just, you know, it's almost like it was parts are left out. If you read a book and it was read, and the book read like the Torah, you would say, you know, I must be missing pages. There's something that's not here. Okay? So Tosha Baal Peh exists. It's necessary. It has to be. Fine. Now, just by way of introduction, a second introduction just to the main point, what does Tosha Baal Peh consist of? If I asked you, what are the parts of Torah Sheba Al Peh, the oral Torah? What would you say? Huh? Nah, you're going backwards. I'm talking substance, not the names of the books. Like, okay, what is Torah Sheba Al Peh come to do? Okay, so there's a whole bunch of places this is dealt with. The Rambam, in one place, boils it down to three categories, and only three categories. They have subcategories. But it's the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim. It's number 6 on the sheet. The Rambam says, "Kol mi she'eina osa kehora asan." Anybody who disregards the ruling of Bezdin Hagadol, the Sanhedrin, over below sase, he violates a negative commandment. She'nema lo sasur mikol adavar she'agidu l'chayamin u'smol. Right? You can't deviate from what the Sanhedrin tells you, right or left. Now the Rambam tells you what is in the what is under the control of the Sanhedrin? And here, the Sanhedrin is a stand-in, really, for the idea of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So he says, the first things, what do they do? Echad dvarim shalomdu osomi piyashmua, v'heim Torah Sheba'al Peh. Things that they got the Kabbalah from Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And this consists of things that there are sources for in the Torah, and things that there are no sources for in the Torah. There are plenty of things that you could, ayin tachas ayin, again, being money and not actually poking the guy's eye out. There's no source for it in the Torah. It's halacha l'moshe misinai. We had the Kabbalah that the meaning of this pasuk is pay money and don't poke the guy's eye out. Okay, number two. Ve'echa dvarim shalomdum mipi da'atam ba'achas min hamidos she'ator nidreshes bohen v'nira be'eineyem shadovar zekachu. Then, the second area that Chazal have, or they can use the Yud Gimel Midos Shatoni Dreshes Bohen, Kal V'Chomer, Gzeira Shava, all the rules. I think the fancy Hebrew English word is hermeneutics, but I don't know what that means. But they could use hermeneutics to pull things out, to learn things from the Torah. Now, what's important here is these are not, even though these are also considered to be part of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, they were not given to Moshe Rabbeinu in the sense that the Torah was given with all of these drashos. They were things that Chazal learned on their own, consistent with what they understood the Torah to have to be. That's two. And number three, and by the way, the Rambam doesn't have these, I put these numbers in, just in case you ever wondered. The Rambam doesn't say 1, 2, 3. Three, ve'echad dvarim she'asum siyag la'Torah, ulufi ma'sha'ashar tzricha. Right? These are just precautionary measures that Chazal instituted because they were necessary. In 1 week, we're going to remember to fix that before the lights actually go out. Okay. V'hein ha'gzeiros v'ha'takonos v'aminhogos. Right? Things that do not have a source, even though we say, all Torah Sheba'al Peh halacha l'moshe misinai, here the Rambam says clearly, they weren't given to Moshe, there's no source for them in the Torah, Chazal had the power to institute gzeiros, to make takonos, because they think it's necessary. So for example, Yochanan ben Zakkai said, now that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, we should take a lulav all 7 days of Sukkos, not just 1 day, which used to be the din. Why? Well, it will help us remember the Beis HaMikdash. That's within the power of Chazal to do. It has nothing to do with something that Moshe Rabbeinu told him or not. Yeah. Louder. I could. Let's put it this way. It's understood that all of number three are Drabanan. Maybe I should have been clear about that. Right, anything that Chazal say on their own, not based on Yud Gimel Midos Shatoni Dreshes Bohen, and not Halach L'Moshe Misinai, is a Drabanan. It doesn't make a difference because we have to abide by it anyway. But that's the third part of their power that makes up Torah Sheba'al Peh. Kalecha ve'echad me'elu ha'shlosh edvarim mitzvah saseh lishmur alahen va'over al-kach al-kalecha men over below saseh. Okay, so in the Rambam's way, Pinchas, you're wrong. Because since it says lo sasur, so all drabanans become okay. But I understand what you were saying. Correct. So drabanans are safek drabanan lekula, safek daraisa lechumra. Right. But for the most part, we don't distinguish between Doraisa and Darabanan. They're all binding. They're all obligatory. Huh?
That itself is Torah Sivan.
The Losasa is a Pasuk.
Yeah, no, but you forgot that you do have to make her with the Darabanan.
Oh, that's also, well, that happens to be my locus. But okay, it could be. Yeah.
For number two, you're saying that James, was on the and they were able to match a.
No, I didn't mean to say that. Because I don't want to say that. There's a source in the Torah that Chazal used to prove the existence of Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's the plural use of the word Toros. All I wanted to say is, even if we didn't have that, it's self-evident to anybody with a brain who learns Torah Shebichtav that there had to be a Torah Sheba'al Peh. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, I don't think so. In number three, they didn't know the halacha. Number three is a new halacha that Chazal or Bezdin HaGadol decided was necessary for the time. Oh, okay, sorry, number two. Go ahead then. Say it again. I don't know, when he says, B'nir b'neim shadavaz kachu, I didn't understand it the way you're saying it. The way you're saying it means they always knew that and now they needed a source. I think that's part of number one in the Rambam. I think number two is they learned it on their own with Yud Gimel Yud Shatan and Yerushalayim. And obviously they must have assumed that that was the Ritzon Hashem. But, okay, I think so. I think you're in number one. And this is, yeah. No, he does. Because we say that Shiurim halacha Moshe Misinai, that a Kizayis and a Kibbeis, so that's one of the demons that we have that in Mesorah. The Gemara says clearly that Shiurim are halacha Moshe Misinai. They're part of the part that there's no source for. It was just given. When it said you have to eat a carbon pesach, so we have halacha Moshe Misinai, that means the minimum of a Kizayis. Yeah. Chicken and milk. Chicken and milk is mutter min haTorah. Okay? Chazal came and said, well, chicken is the first cousin of meat, and people will confuse it too. So the Rambam says very clearly, anybody who says that eating chicken and milk is an Issur D'oraisa is over on an Issur D'oraisa of Baal Tosif. Because you're making up. It's not. It's an Issur D'Rabbanan. That's an example of. Yeah, but that's a theoretical point. You're right, because if you violate Lo Sosur, but if we get into that, it will never make my main point. And my daughter's went, yeah. This is the last question for now. Yeah. Yeah, so it's the same thing. The Rambam will say, the Gemara has a whole page of sources for why pre-Eitz Hadar is an Esrog. But the Rambam says in the Perashat Rishayim, we knew it all along, they're just asmachtos. Right? It's just a way to help us remember. So sometimes the Gemara knows the answer already. It just wants to hang it on a pasuk. But it knew the answer before the discussion started. Okay. I suppose. I mean, that's really thought of as being like just a later, you know, its own category. But I suppose, yes. Except that His takanas were only binding on those who accepted them. Right? Where I think when Bezdin HaGadol made a takana, it wasn't, you know, a question of Sfardim or Ashkenazim. It was all in. So it might be slightly different. Okay. Let's take one step back and try to understand the significance of the term Torah Sheba'al Peh. So what does it mean, literally? Not a trick question. Oral Torah. But that's not just, you know, a shorthand term. That used to have a real meaning, right? So look at the Gemara, and look at number 7. The Gemara in Gittin says as follows. Dorash Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeini miturgmanya to Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeini was the miturgman, the loudspeaker, the interpreter for Ish Lakish. He says, Ksiv. Ksob l'chos ha'dvarim ha'ele. On the one end, it says, write down these things. Uksiv elsewhere, it says, ki alpi ha'dvarim ha'ele. Alpi is what? Is orally. Ha'ketzad. So the din is, dvarim shebichsav iat ha'rashay la'omun alpeh. Things that are written down, Torah shebichsav, you're not supposed to say by heart. And more important for our purposes, dvarim sheba'alpeh. And Torah Sheba Alpeh cannot be written down. And that was the din for the longest time, till Rebbe came, right? It's almost inconceivable for us to think of Mishnayos and Gemara as being oral and not written down. But that was the din, and it took a Horas Shah, right? They had to come and say, people are just losing it. They're not able to retain all of Torah Sheba Alpeh anymore. And Eis Lasos Vashem Eperu Torah Secha. Now is the time we have to violate this drasha d'oraisa of not writing it down. Okay, so now the question becomes twofold. Originally I asked, why did we need a Torah Sheba Alpeh? Right? But now I want to understand, what's the quality of Baal Peh that the halacha wanted it not to be written down? Meaning, it's one thing to say the Torah came with another explanatory book, or books. But it's a wholly different thing to say, and that explanation, you're not allowed to write it down. Right? That changes the whole dynamic. So now I want to go back to the question I really wanted to ask. And that is, why do we need a Torah Sheba'al Peh? Meaning, again, why couldn't the Torah have told us exactly what it meant? These are the 39 Malachas of Shabbos. This is what an Esrog is. Ayin tachas ayin means money and not poking at somebody else's eye. Why did it have to be that the Torah was given without all the information we need to understand it, and that other information, when it was given, couldn't be written down? I'm going to try to answer it. This is like a teaching method I once learned, you know. You present it as a question, but then... Okay? So I want to... There are many, many possible explanations, which means none of them are right and none of them are wrong. I want to present five that I got from Rav Chaim Navon. Well, I chose these five, but each one is independently fascinating, and I think ultimately it gets us to a deeper understanding of Torah Sheba'al Peh. But even before we do that, you have to look at this number 8, Megillas Tainis. Megillas Tainis is one of the earliest sources we have of Torah Sheba'al Peh. It was written down in Bayis Sheni. Megillas Tainis, it's not what it sounds like. Megillas Tainis is a list of fast days, but it's the opposite. It's a list of days on which you can't fast. They're minor holidays that something really good happened on. Okay? Let's see what really good thing happened this month. Ba'arba b'tamuz oda sefer gzeirasa. The 4th of Tammuz is on the list, because this is the sefer of Gzeros. What does that mean? So it tells us. Mipnei shehaya kasuv u'munach l'tzidukim sefer Gzeros. There was a certain book called Sefer Gzeros that the Tzidukim had. What was written in that book? Eilu sheniskalim ve'eilu shenisrafim eilu sheneheragin ve'eilu shenechnakin. It had the complete list, what all of us would want. It had like the notes to Torah Shebichsav. It told you who got skila and who got treif and who got harag and who got chenek, exactly who got what, stuff that's not written in the Torah. Now what happened? Oops, second line towards the end. Ukshayu yoshvin va'adam shoel umarin lo b'sefer. Somebody would come and say, okay, what's the din for this person? Omer lahem minayin shezechayev skila v'zechayev treif v'zechayev harag v'zechayev chanika. Then they would say, how do you know that that's the din? Lo hayu yodin lahavi raya min haTorah. The Tzidukim, because of the book, they didn't know how to use the Torah. They didn't know how to use Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah Shebichsav. Because it's hard to use. Because it doesn't really say it there. So instead of opening up a Sefer Torah and learning, they would open their book. Omru lahem chachamim. Halo kosuv al pi haTorah she yarucha. Melamed she'ein kosvin halachos b'sefer. So chachamim said to them, it's also to write it down in a book. Right? That's the drasha. Torah Sheba'al Peh cannot be written down. And Yom Shebitluhu Asauhu Yom Tov. It was such, when they lost this book, the Sefer Gzeros, they made it a Yom Tov. So, me, if I lost that book, I'd be disappointed. Because that's like the answer book. Right? But Chazal said, no, when you lose that book, it's a Yom Tov. Why? Because that book is stopping you from learning Torah Shebichtav. The way it was supposed to work was, you look for answers in Torah Shebichtav, you use Torah Shebaal Peh to help you find the answers. But the way the Gemara presents it here, or the way the Megillas Tanis presents it, Lo hayu yodim lahavi raya min haTorah. This book served as a barrier to people learning Torah Shebichtav, which was the idea all along. So you start to get a hint for the fact that Torah Shebaal Peh was supposed to be oral for a reason, because it wasn't supposed to overwhelm Torah Shebichtav. At least it seems that way. Because, again, this is a list of significant events that were so significant that we don't fast on those days. So it was a big deal to Chazal when they lost the answer book for who gets what Misa. And the Gemara explains, because this way people stopped learning Torah Shebichtav. When they lost that book, they had to start looking in the Torah again to figure out what the din was. Okay, now, let's come back to the question I wanted to talk about all along, which is, why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu have given us a complete Torah that had all the information we need so that we wouldn't be struggling the way we were thousands of years ago and the way we struggle today to try to figure out exactly what the meaning is? Okay? First, fascinating, and I think this is the most famous idea, and historically, it's certainly true. The Medrash Tanchuma number 9 says, Rav Yehuda Bar Shalom, Kisha Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Ksov lecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe and Harsina. Okay, write down the Torah. Bikesh Moshe shetehei ha-mishnah b'chsav. So Moshe said, let me write the whole thing down. So all the people who thought that my question was a dumb question, okay, Moshe asked that question in the Medrash, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me write it all down. Why do I have to memorize all this other stuff? I write it all down. Ulefi shetzafa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw in B'nevuah, Sheumo Saolam Asidin Litargem Es HaTorah V'lihiyos Korin Bo'yivanis. Torah Shebichtav was going to be translated into Greek and other languages. V'heim Omrim Anu Yisrael. Who's this? Historically, who's this? Christians. Christians say, no, we're the you used to be the real Jews, but now we're the real Jews, right? We have the Torah Shebichtav. V'heimu on Yisrael, v'ad achshav hamoznayim me'uyan. Pretty much you can't tell, right? The scales are even. Omer lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'akum. So God Ki'ilu says to the Gentiles, to the Christians, atem omrim sha'atem bini. You say that you're my son. That's obviously also a Christian thing. Eini yodea elamisha mistorin sheli etzlo. I only trust the people who have my mysteries, my secrets, my Torah Shebaal Peh. Ve'ezohi zo ha-mishnah shenosno al peh. So, according to the Medrash, why wasn't the Torah not all written down? Because when the time comes to distinguish between the real Jews and the fake Jews, we will be distinguished by our knowledge of Torah Shebaal Peh. And you could fake Torah Shebichtav, right? Because you could just read it in translation. But Torah Shebaal Peh, now presumably, art school had to overcome this when they translated the Talmud. And there was objection to it. But the truth is, even now, it's impossible to fake the kind of knowledge it takes to be a religious Jew. And certainly, even in all the disputants, in the Middle Ages with Jews, were all converts. Because Goyim could never, you just can't sit and and learn Shas, and learn Poskim. And so according to this Medrash, what's the answer? The answer is God purposely withheld the Torah Shebaal Peh and prevented it from being written down so that we would be the authentic children of God, and only we would really understand, and we'd be able to identify ourselves and distinguish ourselves from the fakers who could read Tanakh, but, didn't really know what it meant. Okay. I think that's pretty interesting historically, and certainly it's one that it's an explanation that's pretty popular because it fits in with a lot of ideas. Second explanation, number 10. Medrash Rabba says, Amrav Abba Sidronim Ya Im Yom Alacha Adam Lama Lo Nitnu Bichsav Divrei Sofrim Kishem She Nitnu Divrei Torah. Somebody asks you, well, why isn't the Torah Shabbat Peh written down like the Torah Shabbat Bichsav? Amor Lo Lefi She'i Efshar Lichtov Kol Divreihem. It's too big. I think that's how I understand it. It's too much. More than this, you need to be careful of. Ma'u mehema, ma'nichnas sabacha, in basa lichtov divrei sofrim, lo mashalo, basa lichtov divreiem, ein keitz v'sof lidvarim la'asos sfarim. It's just too much. Now, it's hard to know. Presumably God could have given, 24 Sifrei Tanakh and 500... Torah Shabbat Peh books. I don't know. But this Medrash seems to say, I'll have more to say on this in a minute, because I think it can't possibly be as simple as it sounds. It's just too much to write down. But there seems to be an idea that the scope of Torah Shabbat Peh could not be encompassed in a written work. Again, that doesn't make that much sense to me in the fact that it's now encompassed in a single CD-ROM. And, presumably God could have done what he wanted. But this Medrash hints at the fact that maybe its ever-growing nature prevented it from being written down. Okay, that's two. Third idea. It's not on the sheet, but it just comes from a bunch of different places. This is the Rambam's idea. When people accuse the Rambam of being an elitist, which I think it's true to some extent, it's for ideas like this. The Rambam says that Torah Shabbat Peh is not for everybody. If everybody starts paskening halacha, and everybody feels like they could do what they want Torah Shabbat Peh, its authenticity will be lost. There'll be too many machlokas. And the Rambam was terrified of machlokas. Some people think machlokas is a great thing. The Rambam is not one of them. He thinks machlokas is a terrible thing, and that you need authenticity, and you need a singular entity that's responsible, namely the Sanhedrin or the Beis Din Hagadol. And without that, you sort of lose control of the process and you lose control of the unity of Torah Shabbat Peh. I was once talking to, I guess, a prominent posek, and the topic of, like nowadays, like every single halacha has its own set of books. Like Hilchos and Tehillos Yadayim is a three-volume set. And Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, and Hilchos, shaving in the three, right? So I would say, it's great for a person like me, because you can go get smart really quickly, just, get the book and read it. And he said, he thinks it's fine, but, and it was interesting to me, he said, the problem with these compendiums is they give equal weight to every single shita. Somebody sits down with a computer and just pulls out everything and lists it all. And that's not really how Torah Shabbat Peh works, because the shita HaRambam is worth more than the shita of, the Admor Lanod Alami or whoever, right? There are shitos that are main players in halacha, and there are shitos that are not. And you need to know, because you need to know who to assign weight to. I know that the Meiri is a significant and very important shita in the Rishonim. But the Meiri was lost to us, and I think really only in the beginning of the 1900s was the Meiri found and published. And so, for example, Rav Soloveitchik really never used the Meiri on the theory that nobody had ever seen it before. So it wasn't part of the Masorah. Other Rishonim, so you knew, the Ramban, anybody who talked about a Gemara knew what the Ramban's Shita was, because everybody had a Ramban. So it became part of the Masorah in a way that a Sefer that was never found before wasn't part of the Masorah. So here too, the Ramban has this idea that you need to keep control of the process. And if everybody has a right to start looking in Sfarim and figuring out the Halacha, they won't do it properly, and things will get confused. Okay, so much for that Rambam. One more practical explanation before we get to the one I believe is the right answer. The Sma, in his Hakdama to Choshen Mishpat, has a discussion about the development of Torah Shabbat Peh. And the Sma says something that I think all of us know, which is, when you talk to somebody face-to-face, it's more likely that your point will be understood, because the person could look at you and see your hand motions and if you're smiling or not and if you're joking or not. And if they don't understand, they could ask you a question. But if they could just look it up in a book,
then you lose that transmission, you lose that give and take between a teacher and a student, and frankly, this student doesn't pay as much attention because he knows if he missed it, he could just look it up. Imagine if you went to the lecture and you weren't allowed to take notes, but you really would have to concentrate the whole time. Because the whole time you're saying, if I walk out of here and I don't remember this, I'm never going to get it. If I walk out of here and I don't understand, I didn't ask a question, there's no place to look it up. So the Sma says, as a practical matter, Torsha Ba'al Peh required huge discipline and huge give and take, direct give and take between the Rebbe and the Talmud, because there was no other way to do it. And that led to more certainty, because it's sort of, if you raise the bar, well, then people have to reach for the bar. Right, Peh is, well, I guess it's a mouth or oral. Okay, fine. So that's, all of these are definitely explanations. But now let me come to one that I think goes to the heart of it. And this is Rav Yosef Albo in the Sefer Yikar. Rav Yosef Albo lived in Spain in the late 1400s into the 1500s. He actually was involved in disputes with the church, and he was a major player. And I'm going to hide behind him when I say things that, maybe I wouldn't say on my own. He says, in number 11, Va'od, talking about our issue, L'fi she'i efsha she'tihiye Torah Hashem Yisbarach Shlema ba'ofen she'taspik b'chol hazmanim. That's an unbelievable line. He says it's impossible for God's Torah to be complete in a way that would cover all issues in all times. Why? L'fi she'hapratim ha'mischadshim tamid be'inyaneho anashim, because new circumstances and new cases that come up all the time in the give and take among people, b'mishpatim, v'hadvarim ha'nif'alim, in pure law and things that are attached to it, hein rabim ma'od mishiyichlalem sefer. They're too much to be covered by a sefer. Now here I don't think he means quantity. Al Kain, Nasnu Lemosha Besinai Al Peh, Drachim Kolalim. What he gave to Moshe at Har Sinai were principles to cover all of these cases. Nir Mizu Bator Biktsar, and they're hinted at in the Torah, in short. Kidesha Al Yadam Yotzio HaChachamim Shebacholdor Vador HaPratim HaMischachim. So that, in every generation, the Chachamim of that generation can use the principles given to Moshe to deal with the situations that arise in that time. So, for example, the Torah does not tell us whether you could use a Shabbos clock or not. And presumably, it would have messed up the world. If the Torah gave us the dinner of Shabbos clocks, so then, I don't know, people would have had to go out and invent it. But I don't know. It would have messed up the whole time-space continuum if you saw a movie, or three of them. So Rav Yosef Albo says, it's not that God couldn't have given everything, it's that it didn't make any sense to give it all, because it didn't apply at the time. So Torsha Ba'al Peh needed to be given in a way that would allow it to grow, and allow Chazal to be flexible, and apply it in situations where they needed to see. And it's not, by the way, I don't think it's just technical. Meaning, yes, we have all these issues now with Shabbos that are, doors that open automatically and elevators and escalators and Shabbos clock. But I think social issues are the same. And they're harder to deal with because they're more dangerous to deal with because they spread out. It's easy to quantify the question of a Shabbos clock. It's harder to quantify the question of whatever, different roles of different people. And Okay. So why is the Torah Shebaal Peh not supposed to be written down? And why wasn't it given in a fixed form? Because it didn't exist. Right? It had to keep growing to adapt to the times. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, to the extent you could say God couldn't, we'll say in this case God couldn't. Because it didn't make sense to give the Torah Shebaal Peh, 3,000 years ago and include with it thousands of cases that didn't apply. Yes?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, though, whether, in fact, there aren't really two different categories. There's a category of principles, such as Malachos and Shabbos,
okay,
where
Right.
So the question, why did the Torah say this should be for the Tosafot ben Nechah? Why didn't it say it's a black box, it's got the source on it, stuff like that? That is something that isn't going to change for the generation.
I have an idea.
Okay.
Just wait, I'll get to it in 1 second. But I think it's a fair question. But the fundamental point you're okay with.
Well, I agree with
you. That there needs to be a way.
In fact, I would add one thought.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a plus for somebody I've done, there's also this a principle that the Torah is written for the generation of our seed. So there are things.
No, that I disagree with.
Well,
I don't think that's what it means. Dibur Torah b'lashon b'nei Adam does not mean.
No, but it was written in a language that they could understand.
It was written in a language that we can understand.
Afterwards, I'll give you an example where I think that's not true.
Okay.
And I think that God gave a state.
Okay. Okay. But, yeah.
The roundabout way of Rabbi Yishmael's the way of explaining and deriving everything.
No, because I think in that idea you could have done it at the time.
But those principles still survive today. Isn't that what we actually use?
Of course.
So,
but you didn't know what they were. Meaning you had the principles, right? But you didn't know how to apply them because the situation didn't exist.
But the situation is never going to exist as today.
So therefore it wasn't written down. Because all you could have are the rules by which in each generation, Chazal will try to apply the halacha to new cases and new circumstances in order to achieve the result that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to achieve. Yeah. Yeah, so that, okay. So, now, that I think is problematic. I mean, the decision was made to write it down, it had to be written down, and we're all surviving and thriving, and presumably that was the right decision. But, I do think that because it was written down, we've lost some flexibility that we used to have. And here's the point. When you had a memra of somebody, somebody said something, okay, so now the circumstances have changed, and I need to explain it, but it's not the same as if it's written down. Now every single thing that's written down, all of a sudden, you know, even if it makes complete sense that you live in London, and Shavuos, if you're going to pass in like this Magen Avraham that says you need Shlemos, well, then you're only going to start davening at 11:30 at night, and you can daven shachris at 3:45 in the morning, and you're not going to really have any time to learn. Right? So wouldn't the right result be, we'll make early shavuos? No, the Magen Avraham. Okay. God forbid, I'm not saying anything wrong with the Magen Avraham, but it's taken on an importance, like a pasuk in the Torah, in a way that it wasn't supposed to. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz has an essay where he talks about, I think he wrote in the 70s, he talks about the conversion crisis in Israel, which is obviously only getting worse nowadays. And he basically says, we're locked in to tshuvos that were written in different circumstances. And it was, I think it was controversial, because I think people who read it now think it's controversial. But it speaks to me in the sense that he says, okay, there's a tshuva of Achiezer about being, you know, the necessity of being mekabel all of Tarag Mitzvos, and that's halacha. But now you have a situation in Israel where you have all these Russians who really want to be Jewish. It's true that they're not the firmest people in the world, but they're not intermarrying, meaning it's not like they want to marry a Jew and therefore we have to be careful about their gear. They're not getting anything out of it. They live in Israel. They serve in the army. They want to be Jewish. So the question is, how welcoming and how much flexibility do we have in halacha to deal with this situation that never existed before, I think, in the history of our people, of people who want to become Jewish because they want to become Jewish, even though they're not firm. And he says we're hamstrung by the fact that Torah Shebaal Peh is now written down. And so that every tshuva that was written in the last 500 years, you know, you can either have to overrule it. And that wasn't the way it was supposed to be. It would be easier, maybe this is radical today, it would be easier to deal with the conversion crisis in Israel today if we didn't have 500 years of tshuvas written down. Now, there's a lot of great things about having 500 years of tshuvas written down, but there's a downside to it. The downside to it is that Torah Shebaal Peh has become rigid in the way that Torah Shebichtav is supposed to be, and Torah Shebaal Peh was never supposed to be. That's the price we're paying for writing it down. The price is worth it, but there is a price.
Yeah. You take that as the end point, and you make everything so
the other alternative to stay totally flexible is a very slippery slope, and that's where we wind up with conservative and reformed committees.
But you're not taking a position.
So the point being is you have to deal with something.
But I think even if nobody disagrees that so far well is the Gemara, the question is how do you apply Gemaras? There's plenty of flexibility. When I say flexibility, you think, you know, I'm saying conservative or reform. That's what you're hearing, and I understand why, but that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to be authentic, and, you know, it's frustrating that the word flexibility has come to mean anti-halachic when I don't think that's the way it was supposed to be. Yeah. Okay, but that's a subtlety that we've lost. Well, people know. The issue's not the knowledge. And again, I'm not here to say we made a mistake. Rebbe made a mistake when he wrote the Mishnah. Of course, I'm not here to say that. It's working for us. All I'm pointing out is there was a benefit to having it be oral that we've lost. Okay, again, the decision was made, the decision was worth it, we're all sitting here learning, it's all working out fine, but there are certain areas in which it seems to me it could have been otherwise if it was never written down. Josh? No, but why would you want to say that? But they didn't.
You said 2 weeks ago that, you know, Ishi and Haskalah was there because of people were doing it.
Right.
And you needed a way to control that. So that was mentioned there as a way to acknowledge what was already going on.
Right.
Maybe all of this stuff was going on. Maybe it was understood that there was an
answer. I don't think that's true. Like, I don't think Jews put on tefillin before Maamar Har Sinai.
So then, was it square?
So it was exactly like my tefillin are today.
Right.
Exactly. The same guy. That's what I believe. Okay, so somehow, we'll talk 1 week if we have time. So how do we have a machlokas about what tefillin look like? Or? Because we believe nitna Torah v'nischat shehalacha, that what came after Sinai is what we do, and we do it via direct command from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
I have no problem with that. You certainly have a
tradition. Thank God.
We have a tradition
that we started at Mara. Not well before that. No, so we have traditions that the Avos kept Kol Torah Kula. But that's not a halachic source that we could base these things on. I hear you. Okay, what can I say? I disagree. I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know why we would use a medrash that talks about the fact that they kept the Torah in a kind of a vague way as a source to say that the Torah isn't a halachic book. The Torah has a lot of things. I think it has halacha in it also. Right. But what? Okay, but I don't see. Okay, what do you gain by it? Well, so what's the answer?
That there was already a thing going on, that there was an idea to do with this. Kaddish Baruch Hu was out there.
Yeah.
The Jews were putting something on their hands and their heads. There was this spring holiday, and there was a new thing. So that would be just like this.
So why was it written at all?
What?
Why was it written at all?
This was a
historical... Eishes Yifas Torah is a specific din that's given Keneged Yetzirah. If it wasn't written at Torah, we wouldn't know it. If tefillin wasn't written in the Torah, we wouldn't know it. It's true that it's not written in a clear way, but without a pasuk in the Torah, we wouldn't have a mitzvah of tefillin. It's as simple as that. Okay, let me just finish. Our input into Torah Shebaal Peh is not anything I'm saying here tonight. It's recognized. There's tons of sources. Just one easy one. In 12, the pasuk says, "Ki im b'tarah Hashem chatzo u'b'tarah so yegei yomam b'layla." So the Gemara says,
The problem is, Kim b'toras Hashem chetzo, and then in theory would have said, u'b'toras Hashem yehegei yomam v'layla. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabba, b'tchila nikris al shemo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Originally, it's Toras Hashem. V'liv sof nikris al shemo. But in the end, it's called after the person who's learning it. Shenemar b'toras Hashem chetzo, u'b'toraso yehegei yomam v'layla. Torsheba Alpeh is our area in which we can innovate and be mechadesh, not innovate halachos, but innovate ideas. I mean, this is a, you know, there's hundreds of years of tradition of the importance of being mechadesh and making Torsheba Alpeh your own. And now just because it's late, the very last point. Ayin tachas ayin, and things in the Torah, and pre-Eitz Hadar, and things in the Torah that are not written as clearly as they could be. The Chazon Ish says, Chazon Ish is a religious man, says, you know why it says ayin tachas ayin? Because in a certain, from a certain perspective, that was what the punishment was supposed to be. I poke at your eye, you poke at my eye. Okay. The halacha is otherwise. So the Vilna Gaon says, it's important to learn pshat in the pasuk, even if it's not the halacha. Meaning every time, you know, achas tibel akim shnayin shamanu, every time it says something in the Torah, we have an obligation to read the pasuk for what it says. It doesn't mean that I have the right to say, you know, ayin tachas ayin. It says an eye for an eye. So therefore, the din is an eye for an eye. No, I don't have that ability. But I have an obligation to figure out, if the din is money, then why does the Torah say ayin tachas ayin? So I have an idea why. It speaks to me that it was supposed to be a certain way, but it's uncivilized. It's not helpful to the victim. There's a million reasons. But each time the Torah does something like that, I have an obligation and the ability to ask. So why does it say totafos? Why does the Torah say more clearly? I don't know. Why does it say pre? All these things, there is something. So pre to the other, all these drushas in the Gemara, you know, that hadar ba'ilan kalashana. There's all these things. Even if you're not doing it lahalacha, the fact is Torah shebichsav can be midrash in many different ways, and that's not just our right; it's our obligation. And the fact that, you know, the Torah shebaal peh is playing out in the way that it does, doesn't stop us from trying to read psukim originally. One of the funniest things is to read like Shir HaShirim in the English in Art Scroll. Because the whole metaphor concept is lost on them. They actually translate it. You know, Shir HaShirim is a metaphor, is a love story between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. But it's written as a love story between a man and a woman. So to read it, you know, in its midrashic form is to miss the whole point. First you have to read the pasuk. I understand that it's talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if I don't read it as a woman, it loses all its meaning to me. It's an obligation to read psukim, to understand the psukim as written. We don't have the right to change the Kabbalah of what the pshat, of what the understanding of the pasuk is, but we have the right and the obligation to read psukim on our own, because it's our Torah to try to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote it a certain way, even if we do not have the right to then take that and challenge the accepted halacha. All right, I think that's enough for tonight. Marv?